I'm Ava Hartling. Welcome back to the Branded Female Podcast. Would you dare let go of your career in a cushy government position to risk it all for your true passion? And what if you had children? Well, this is exactly what Rachel Fox did when she launched Renard & Co., a sought-after interior design company based in Toronto. Rachel has been a trailblazer in the home decor industry even before launching her own company. Her vision when it comes to contemporary design caught the eye of publications like House & Home and of several prominent homeowners in the GTA. With Renard & Company's evolution from a dynamic startup to an established industry reference, Rachel faces a new landscape of challenges and breakthroughs. This week, I invite you to hear Rachel Fox share her journey and talk about the ups and downs of running a services business that still very much depends on her. If you're a solopreneur or a founder in a creative industry, you'll especially enjoy this episode. This season of our podcast is brought to you by TD Bank Group Women in Enterprise. TD helps women in business achieve success and growth through its program of educational workshops, financing, and mentorship. Visit thebrandisfemale.com/podcast and follow the link to find out how TD can help you. This podcast episode is presented by The Chain, a remarkable memoir written by Shemaine Solomon. Join Shemaine as she exposes a devastating truth of her relationship with a deceitful partner through her captivating storytelling, as she shines a light on the harmful effects of misogyny and the uplifting strength of sisterhood. I had a chance to read the book and was taken aback by its profound insights. This is a must-read for anyone who's been gaslit or coerced into disbelieving their own instincts. The Chain is Indigo's nonfiction staff pick of the month for May. Pick up your copy in store or online at indigo.ca. Rachel, such a pleasure having you on The Brand is Female. Thank you for speaking with me today.
Thank you for having me. It's my joy and pleasure.
So happy to have you on. Excited to hear about your business and your journey building it. As you know, I like to start these conversations by making my guests go down memory lane a little bit. And I want to ask you, growing up, what kind of career were you dreaming of? And, you know, what did you think you'd be doing work-wise later in life? And was it at all connected to what you're actually doing today?
It certainly is. I dreamt of being an artist when I was young as 5 years old. And I started painting and working with my dad. My dad was a doctor, but he's a really great artist. So he was teaching me a lot, and he got into making stained glass windows. So I was into that craft. I just loved it. I love everything creative. So it's not any shock that to any of my friends or family that I'm doing this now.
And tell me a little bit about your path. I believe you did pursue creative studies, and that wasn't necessarily what your parents were envisioning for you as doctors. What was that like? And did you feel like that was preparation for what's next, which we'll get into?
Yeah, I think parents are nervous about their children getting into anything artistic for valid reasons of financial success. Yes. So my parents pushed me into a formal education. I went to university and decided that the most creative thing that I could do at university, because it wasn't an art school, was write. Mm-hmm. So I have an English degree, and then I went into further detail into studying Chaucer and women's studies, and writing became my creative outlet. Mm-hmm. That allowed me and pushed me into another field, which was marketing, so that, you know, I could use at least my creative thinking to help create big brand campaigns, ads, and work with artists, work with writers and art directors. So that was interesting and fun when I was in my 20s and 30s, but it wasn't enough. It wasn't my total passion. And I think the final straw that broke the camel's back was when I was in charge of cars, automotive. And I was thinking, you know, I can do this. I'm making a lot of money. I'm in charge of General Motors at one point, and I just said, I don't really care about torque.
I can't blame you.
And I don't care about the different styles, models of all of these different vehicles and, you know, an F-150 versus whatever it was. I just was like, I'm out.
That was it.
I'm out. I'm done. I had just had my son too. Mm-hmm. And that completely changes as a woman your trajectory on what you think you wanted and what's important, and my child became way more important than staying until, you know, 12 midnight and getting up at 6 a.m. and being at the office at 7 a.m. and no time for your family. Mm-hmm. So it was just time. Mm-hmm. No torque anymore.
So what happened next? Where did you go to from talking about torque and F-150?
I think the smart thing to do was to always have my interior design business on the side.
Yep.
And slowly build. I always had it in the back of my mind that I wanted to do this. So from a creative perspective, on my downtime in marketing and advertising, I was always designing my friends' houses.
Okay.
Decorating, mm-hmm. helping them out, choosing paint colors, doing as much as I could because it was fueling my passion. Mm-hmm. And it made me happy seeing my friends' faces go, oh, wow, this is incredible. You should be doing this. It really encouraged me to keep doing it. I did also create a bathing suit company on the side. Yeah. Okay. I designed. Why not? Yeah, why not? I figured if I can design rooms and houses and interiors, I can do a bathing suit for women. Mm-hmm. What could be so difficult? But that proved to be an incredible challenge. Mm-hmm. I have all the respect in the world for fashion designers and the art and craft of making patterns. Mm-hmm. It's engineering for a moving body part. And so for me, for interior design, it's, you know, it's dimensional, but it's not moving for the most part. I mean, your drapes may flow in the wind but you're not walking around.
The window itself is not walking around.
The window itself is not walking around. Exactly. So I enjoyed it. Tremendously, and I think that the suits and my website and my Instagram and all of the campaign around it are elegant and everything that I wanted, and I have repeat customers coming back asking, can I please get that suit again? So I think things were great about that, but the downside to that is that I'm up against billions and billions of dollars in the fashion industry. And that's a really steep mountain to climb, mm-hmm. and if not impossible. So you need somebody to back you financially, and I had nothing. So I was pouring all of my heart and soul into something that I was very passionate about from a design perspective, but there was no financial upside. Mm-hmm. So in the interim, to pay the bills and support myself and my family, I kept doing interior design work as well as build the bathing suit business. And then I think it was the hill that I was climbing with design was a hill. It wasn't a mountain. It wasn't mm-hmm. a cliff. It was much more easy for me. And it was slowly building a really good business. Mm-hmm. So eventually I met with, I call him my guardian angel. His name is Tom. Mm-hmm. And Tom is a big business owner in Canada. And he ended up being one of my clients. And I said to Tom one day, I said, Tom, you know, I have these two businesses. Would you be willing to help me out and look at my financials and give me a little advice? So I met with Tom, and he's quite direct and sensible. And he said, okay, send them over to me, Rach. Mm-hmm. Let's have a look at them. And then let's have a meeting. So I went into his office and met with him. And on the table, this big, huge, intimidating board table that I used to be in all the time with cars. And I sat down with him, and he had a huge X through my bathing suit company and a big check mark through the interior design business.
The message was clear.
The message was clear. He said, take all of those suits that you have and your fabrics and get rid of them. And this is your focus going forward. So I listened. And then I kept going and building the business.
And that's when you really, it became your main gig. That's when you decided you were going to put your eggs in that basket and do that full time.
Yes. He basically explained to me, you know, you're up against, as I said, a billion-dollar industry. Mm-hmm. And this is how direct he is. If you were in your 20s, I'd say keep going. but you're not. You're a middle-aged woman and you're trying to build something quickly so that you can gain some momentum and be successful. It's what you love. He's like, keep going with it. What are you doing? You know? So I'm like, okay, thanks for the I'm not in my 20s comment, but fine. I get it.
Yeah, exactly. Going back, what made you feel, how did you even know that interior design was something that interested you? You know, you started doing it. It was kind of a hobby, I guess, for the first few years. But how did you know that was your true passion?
I think that the feeling that I had in my heart is what was just, it was just obvious. It just, I walk into rooms and I know exactly what I'm going to do to them to make them better. And I can't help it. I go into restaurants and I'm like, oh God, if they only did this, this place would be, you know, so much happier or inviting or sexier, moodier, whatever it is. Or I go into places and I'm like, oh my God, this is exquisite. I'm jealous. You know, I wish I had done that.
So it's very intuitive for you.
Very intuitive. I look at things that are a certain shape or a certain size. And my team will laugh. They give me challenges all the time. They're like, how many inches is that? How tall is that wall? And I'll say, okay, it's probably 20 feet. They're like, that's exactly what it is, you know, or this shape isn't going to work because of this. I just see it.
So now, based on your guardian angel's advice, going full time, what was it like now finally, you know, not just doing this as a hobby, but really launching it into your main gig? And was it challenging at all? Like at this point, I'm guessing you would be doing business development and marketing yourself a little bit more aggressively. So what was that phase like for you?
You know, nothing is easy. If you really want something, you'll find a way to do it, and you won't stop. Marketing, as much as I spent what seems like a lifetime in marketing, it's harder for me to market myself. Some people are very natural at it. I mean, we see it on Instagram, Facebook. People just have a natural ability to put themselves in front of a camera and talk about what they do. It doesn't come naturally for me. I find it awkward, and so I have to get over that and try to do a little bit more. But it's more word of mouth that has built my business, and the clientele that I managed to work with have been so supportive, and they pass my name on to another friend, and those wonderful people hang out with other wonderful people. So that's been my luck of the success. I also think that you should in business be very careful with billing and ensuring that you don't overbill people or, you know, there's that show American Greed. You have to be really careful. You have to be fair and honest and transparent. And that's how I had worked with my clients in marketing, and I used those same principles with my own company. You know, here's the fee. There's nothing hidden. And be proud of what value you're giving. You know, it was hard for me to do that because I'm even though I'm outgoing and fun, I guess people will have to tell you that. But deep down, I'm quite shy, and it's hard for me to ask for payment and ask for money.
Yeah. And it's something that a lot of women entrepreneurs have challenges with. It's figuring out what's a fair value. And there is a value for any work that we do, right? And it's setting the right amount. But I think for a lot of women who are in the services business, figuring out what to charge clients is very difficult and can trigger a lot, you know, a lot of things. How did you overcome that? How did you manage that process in the first few years?
Tom.
So having a great external advisor usually
helps. Having a great external advisor who literally said, you know, you're not charging enough. This is ridiculous. You are absolutely worth three times that amount. And he literally said to me, you know, Rachel, I want, you know, your last bill. I said, yes. He said, I want you to take that bill and triple it and send it back to me. And I'm like, what? Who does that? What the heck? So he said, this is what you need to be charging out for what you do. Mm. You have done something that that is so important to me, and that is make my wife and my family happy. That is worth, that's priceless. Mm-hmm. So please mark it up. And I'm like, okay. So then I gradually just sort of, I you know, for my existing clients, I left their rate at the same rate. And then as new clients came on, I started testing, and I gradually increased bit by bit to a point where I was comfortable with. And then the other business reality that you start learning is that you have overhead. You know, we have to drive cars. We have to collect samples. We have to pay for the electricity, the printing. I have two wonderful girls that I employ. I have to pay their taxes. So the rates have to be fair.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And you can't give yourself away. And you're giving your team away when you do that. And that's not right.
This season of The Brandiest Female is made possible with the support of TD Women in Enterprise. And they're about confidently building you. As a woman entrepreneur myself, I know I need all the support I can get. It takes sound advice plus guidance to the right connections, tools, and resources. What's great about TD services for women in business is their collaborative approach. TD can facilitate and connect you to workshops, coaching, and mentorship, and they engage other like-minded business leaders in an authentic way, so we can share experiences and learn from each other. TD Women in Enterprise has banking specialists who are able to be proactive in the advice and guidance they give to women in business. Embark on an unforgettable journey through love, betrayal, and sisterhood in The Chain by Chimène Solomon, a gripping memoir that digs deep into the aftermath of persistent misogyny as Chimène bravely recounts her personal journey through powerful storytelling while challenging societal norms and celebrating the power of female solidarity. New York Times bestselling author Maggie Smith describes The Chain as a formidable book, a triumph of mind, body, and spirit. The Chain happens to be Indigo's nonfiction staff pick of the month for May. Pick up your copy in store or online at indigo.ca. You also talked about, you know, your shy, your relative shyness and marketing yourself. You've had some great exposure as well. What's worked well for you, you know, apart from word of mouth, and I know word of mouth is a big one as you were describing, but what are your tips for marketing for somebody who is in the services business? And I know there was some PR exposure that has helped you in your career, among other things.
I think specifically like House and Home has been, it added credibility to my work. I must call them again. I have some more for them.
Good reminder.
That, you know, getting in. So for other women that are in a service industry, it's having somebody endorse you. Mm-hmm. That's a credible, resource. Right. So that's been really helpful. I opened this store, so that's a PR push. It's also when people walk in, they can come in and come to the back and see what we do, speak to us. So that's another way to get your word of mouth out there, and then have something physical for people to come in and see. Locally versus just online and seeing pictures.
Yeah. And in the kind of business you're in, it makes a huge difference, right? People want to be able to see the work and see objects and kind of have that interaction.
Yeah, it's tactile. You want to touch things. I want to show them the different textures of fabrics or look at this locally made sofa that we designed.
How big does technology play a role in your industry? And, you know, there's so many, everyone talks about how AI is revolutionizing really any industry, any trade. But is technology something that you see, you know, as a great tool, as a great opportunity for yourself in the future? Do you see any threats around? I know there are more services now where, you know, you can get an online tool to do interior design for you. And I don't think they're particularly sophisticated at this point, but what's your outlook?
They will be.
Yeah.
I think that AI is frightening for a lot of people. So my husband's a writer. It's really easy to go online and have AI write a script. Mm-hmm. The thing that we all have to realize is that it's a tool. Mm-hmm. It's not human.
Yeah.
So I think the successful people are going to be the ones that understand how to use AI as a tool. Mm-hmm. So for me, for any of these 3D AI programs, I love them. I'm like, okay, I can show you how this is going to work versus me spending, you know, 2 weeks doing a three-dimensional room drawing mm-hmm. and then charging for that.
Right.
So it can be, if used well, a tool that can free us to be thinking creatively mm-hmm. versus trying to show what we already know is going to work mm-hmm. for a design. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it eliminates the stress of trying to sell what what I already see and dream of. Mm-hmm. But you know, AI has some downsides too. I mean, obviously, I don't agree with AI taking other people's jobs.
Right.
So that's something we have to be very careful of going forward. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like, you know, going to the grocery store and all of a sudden all of our little cash out ladies and gentlemen are no longer there, and we're using, we have to cash ourselves out ourselves. Yeah. And now they're having problems because people are stealing mm-hmm. By accident or intentionally. It's going to happen because they're not trained cashiers. There's an impersonality with technology that I think we need to be conscious of going forward. And listen, I want to employ people. Mm-hmm. I want to help them build their lives. Mm-hmm. For me, if I became really big, I would make that an objective. You know, how is this tool helping me generate jobs versus mm-hmm. how is this tool making me rich?
Speaking of hiring people, and the work you do is very much relationship-based. Clients entrust you with, you know, coming in their homes or coming in their place of business and really, you know, working on that space, which is a space they live in, you know, on a daily or almost daily basis. You're hiring team members, you know, that kind of come into the equation and become part of that relationship as well. Has hiring been a challenge for you? Is it easy to find the kind of employees you're looking for? And what's your philosophy around team building?
I've been really lucky. My team has found me. It's a really lovely story. My son's grade one teacher reached out to me and said, listen, my daughter is at design school at Ryerson. She's graduating, and to get her degree, she needs to intern with a designer. Would you be interested in bringing her on? And I at first was really nervous because I was still growing. I thought, how am I going to pay for a salary? How am I going to afford this? And it goes right back to the original question of, am I billing enough? So that was a bit of a growth thing for me. And then once I agreed to it, it was easy for me to build upon that. And specifically, she was just she's a great girl, a great woman, great lady. And it made it easy for me to bring her on board with clients. And, you know, that's just lucky for me. If for some reason a personality doesn't work. You know in your heart, you know in your head that this isn't the right fit. And then my second employee, Emma, she was also referred to me through clients, and she was just the right fit as well. Great personality, great demeanor. We pride ourselves on no ego. There's no task that's too small or too big. You know, if we need to get on our hands and knees and clean a room because our clients are moving in the next day and our trades are desperately trying to finish to the last minute, then we do that. We don't care. Whatever it takes to make something right and make people happy, that's our mission and our roles. So no ego, no attitude. Even when we're in some circumstances in difficult situations with very difficult clients, mm-hmm. We just all know how to manage politely and back away and not have any issues. So that's it.
You're an entrepreneur in a creative field, and I know often for, especially for women entrepreneurs, it can be the case for men as well. But we have to wear all the hats, right, when we launch our company. And this means we want to focus on the great services we know we're good at. And in your case, it is a creative output, but you have to wear all the hats. You're also, you know, head of HR, head of IT, head of finances. How do you reconcile the two? And are there any challenges around, you know, those two realities for you?
There are major challenges with that. From a financial perspective, and it's really hard for me to understand taxes, tax implications, payroll, corporate tax. All of those things were really foreign to me. It was, you know, my main objective was to make things beautiful, and doing the books and bookkeeping was not part of that equation. So I think the best thing that we can do is hire people that are experts in that field that you are not. Don't try to do it. Having a great bookkeeper, having a great accountant, and having a great lawyer are the most important things you can do as a business owner.
100%.
You need to protect yourself. You need to ensure that somebody else is pushing you when you are dragging your heels and your butt with your financial statements. You need to have someone to organize you with your receivables and payments and so on and so forth, so you don't fall behind. Mm-hmm. And I think the most important thing is that you have to stay on top of your profit and loss. Mm-hmm. And if you can't do it, you hire the right people to do it. Mm-hmm. Get help and don't be afraid to pay for it. Get it. I think that has literally saved me.
Yeah, great advice. And I know many women find themselves in challenging situations concerning these areas.
Mm-hmm. And a lawyer is really important too, because, you know, you have agreements with clients. And setting up those agreements up front really eliminates a lot of stress in the long run, because if someone comes back and says, well, I never said I was going to pay you for that, then you have, well, I have an agreement with you, and this was our agreement. Mm-hmm. And then you can at least, so you don't, you know, again, it's about sleeping well at night. Yeah. You don't have to be militant about that agreement if your lawyer and your client are all on the same page. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, if you're not happy with this, let's amend this.
Yeah.
And you work through it. It's much easier when somebody else is dealing with all that stress.
Yeah.
Focus on what you're good at.
Yeah.
Don't, as Tom said to me before as well, he said the funniest thing, I don't eat food in an airplane. Mm-hmm. Because the airplane is not a restaurant and not chefs.
It's
so
not their specialty.
It's not their specialty. So stick with what you're good at and get someone else to deal with what you're not.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Great analogy. what is next in terms of where you're taking the business, what you'd like to achieve, you know, in the next little while? What's on your vision board for the months ahead?
I would really love to grow both the, and I know everyone's saying it's bricks and mortar, but I'd like to grow the store and the products, both in the bricks and mortar, but also online. I think that there's a really big opportunity that's happening right now without me. Designers are taking their favorite products or making them and then selling them online. I think that's a smart thing to do. They don't have to be expensive, or they can be expensive. That's all part of my brand.
Right.
So I think that would be a really lovely, nice, fun next step. Mm-hmm. I also would love to support more local artists, painters, and you know, whatever, sculpture, whatever. I think that they need support as well. Mm-hmm. So, and with that, local furniture, we have access to such great products here in Ontario and Canada. You know, Montreal is like phenomenal. Mm-hmm. And Toronto obviously has a larger population. We have access to people that have been making furniture for over 60 years. Mm-hmm. And they're known to us as trade. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to support a larger local group of people all the way to the West Coast, the East Coast, doesn't matter. I'd like to support their products and their creativity. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah, it's important. You know, we it's easy for us to go online. I'm not putting down any of the big box stores, mm-hmm. but it's very easy for people because they've made it easy. It's a multi-billion dollar business. But they're shipping furniture from the other side of the world. And you're being charged for that. And it may look quality, but a lot of it's MDF. So there's all sorts of things that you know, we don't need to do. Mm-hmm. It's our environment as well. Why are we doing that when I can have somebody an hour and a half outside of Toronto who's been trained for their past, you know, three generations on making stunning tables, chairs, mm-hmm. Wood carved wood cabinets, yeah. You know, like that's what we need to bring ourselves back. And that actually goes right back circle to AI and technology.
Yeah.
So if technology is so far advanced that, it is doing a lot of our local jobs, then we need to realize that these machines can't do some of these handcrafted things. Mm-hmm. We need to own our trades. We need to bring that back a bit.
It does. And I think it's supporting local artisans, local creators, which we vote with our dollars, right? We often have this conversation the same way that, you know, we spend a certain amount on, you know, across different categories of products that we consume. If we choose to invest those dollars with companies that match our businesses. So for someone, it can be supporting women-owned, women-led companies, supporting locals, supporting Black entrepreneurs, Indigenous entrepreneurs. And the same goes with local creators, but often they're harder to find. They don't have the same marketing budget as the big players, obviously. So they're not the first option that comes up on
That's
Google
right.
or on you know,
yes,
the
yes.
Instagram algorithm. But it's yes. worth digging into. And then somebody like you is a great resource to point people in their direction.
And then it's special.
Yeah.
You know, it's not something that everybody can have. You know, we can all have a Pottery Barn mm-hmm. living room.
Yeah,
you know?
That's easy.
Easy. Here you go. Let's buy this. Like, for me, great design is curated. Mm-hmm. And that's what I'd like to do for our online sales, is curate products that are local mm-hmm. artisans and go from there.
Love that. In closing, if you had to share two or three pieces of advice with women entrepreneurs and maybe women who are in, you know, similar creative services, what would be your top expert wisdom for them?
Find your Tom.
Shout out to Tom, the guardian angel.
And that usually if you do find your Tom, their advice is free.
Yeah.
And their advice is something that you should listen to because they have already done it, been there, made the mistakes. Mm. And that's hard to do because there aren't a lot of Toms out there. So the second runner up is listen to your basic, your heart, your instincts, be true to yourself, be true to your design ideas, be true to your team. Mm-hmm. And then I would say, don't be afraid mm-hmm. to make mistakes because you are going to make them. I mean,
Everyone does.
And when you're faced with adversity and difficult clients, remember that for every difficult client, there's 10 really amazing ones. Mm-hmm. And keep going. Don't be discouraged. It's hard not to be discouraged, mm-hmm. especially when you're trying to make a living. Mm-hmm. And then some people can be put downs.
Yeah.
And negative. Oh, yeah. There's a lot of negatives. Lot of
those. Yeah.
Like, it's always like a why. Mm-hmm. Why? Why did you have to do that? Why did you have to say that? Mm-hmm. But you got to let it go. You got to just go, okay, next page, boom, let's go. But stand up for yourself. Mm-hmm. You know, don't let people walk over you. Mm-hmm. And then you feel good. And sleep well at night because you've done all those things, you know? You haven't hurt anybody. You're working hard. You're true to your design sense. Your team is happy. Mm-hmm. And you're making a little bit of an income. Mm-hmm. Sleep well.
Speaking of sleeping well, any advice around, I mean, I hate the term work-life balance. I think it's a myth. You know, it's been sold to women, especially women who own their own companies. We know it's, you know, we're going to be investing time and effort and energy. But for you, I know, you know, you have your family as well. And there was a time where, you know, you were juggling multiple jobs and you had, your hobby on the side, which became the main business. Any advice on kind of figuring out what makes sense for you in terms of approaching some form of balance and making time for yourself, for sleep, for self-care?
Yeah, right. I think sleep is really important. Mm-hmm. You just know there are times when you're on a deadline, you just have to go with it. You have to work all night. Sleep will come once you get it, you know, your deadlines completed. I will say one thing that I'd prefer this and working 24/7 for myself than working 24/7 to make someone else rich. This is at least your passion, your business, your mistakes, yeah. your triumphs, and, you know, not someone else's. So, you know, a lot of people are this is not for the faint of heart.
Yeah.
I think, you know, like it's much safer to take a paycheck and a T4 at the end of the day than to go this route. And it's just, that's it. It's just not something that everybody wants to do. So you have to have the entrepreneurial spirit in your heart and your mind that I know this is going to be hard, but I'm not turning back.
Yeah.
And keep going. Mm-hmm. I mean, even yesterday, I just had a real upset. I was pitching for a really big job that I really, really wanted in Rosedale. And I knew I was up against really big names, big building companies. Ultimately, I didn't get it. And so I was so upset yesterday. I was down on myself. I'm like, oh, my God, what's the next job? Where am I going from here? Can I pay the bills? But you just have to, okay, feel sorry for yourself for a minute. Everybody does. Get over it. Have a glass of wine.
Yeah, it's
chill
it's,
out.
It's okay to kind of like somebody just shared, it's okay to grieve, you know, the thing you wanted, you lost, but don't dwell on it.
Don't dwell on it, and don't make it about your product, which is so easy to do. I started thinking maybe my images weren't great enough. Maybe our pricing was off. Mm-hmm. You just second guess everything. And you're like, why didn't I get it? I was praying to the trees, to God, to the stars, the moon to get this job. And I didn't get it.
So
now I've had my glass of wine. I'm watching The Voice. I'm going to bed, you know, mindless stuff, and get up the next day and keep going at it and go at your next client, go at your next challenge. Mm-hmm. And think about, okay, that didn't work. What else can I do?
Mm-hmm. 100%.
Maybe there's smaller jobs that we can work on to build that income back. Whatever it is, you know?
I find too, when something's, you know, when you, a certain opportunity passes you, it's because there is something else that's meant for you. It might not be right away, but.
There, that's a really great way to think about it. You have to, otherwise you won't get out of bed. You know,
it's not worth staying there. Well, thank you so much for all this advice and sharing your journey. So we'll share your website and any links for anyone that wants to learn more about your business and your services. And can't wait to see what happens next with Rachel Fox and team. Thank you so much for your time today, Rachel.
That's so nice. Thank you. Have the best day.
Thank you so much for listening to the Brand is Female podcast. Please don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. Thank you to TD Women and Enterprise for their support of The Brand is Female. You've got it in you to succeed. Let TD help guide you. Visit thebrandisfemale.com to learn more.